together, and you heard it on the Swing Era. Well, to take us to the bottom of the hour, let's hop on the merry-go-round, along with Mills Blue Rhythm Band. No question about it, you're listening to The Swing Era. I'm your host, Bud Pearson, and I would welcome any comments or requests. Just email us at swingera@earthlink.net. That's swingera@earthlink.net. Back to the Swing Era, where it's the winter of 1935. We'll be right back.
Jivin' Sam from the heart of Harlem was a racket-laying cat when it came to the ladies. Jivin' Sam, when his gauge was high, that cat could fly from heaven to Hades. Trucking along the avenue, watching the chicks roll by, he'd laugh a lane and with a sweet refrain, Jivin' Sam would cry. He said,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know just how you feel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can tell from the way you feel. I like your eyes, I like your smile, admire the way you walk.
Yes, love it.
Adore your size, I think it's wise to get together like birds of a feather. Yes, yes, yes,
yes, yes,
yes. Yes, I'm living in a great big way.
Yes, 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 three.
Everything about you appeals to me. Honey, please quit your stalling, baby. Can't you see I'm falling? Yes, 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 I'm falling in love with you. Lay it pops, lay it pops.
On the Swing Era, let's have a jubilee with Mills Blue Rhythm Band. That, the title of an October 1934 tune, making the rounds. Let's Have a Jubilee, arranged by Alex Hill, with statements by Red Allen's trumpet, Joe Garland's baritone sax, J.C. Higginbotham's trombone, and the clarinet of Gene Michel. In the middle of the stack, leader Lucky Millinder sang Edgar Hayes' arrangement of Yes, Yes, helped out by Joe Garland, J.C., Red, and Edgar Hayes' piano. And kicking off the second half of the Swing Era, what sounds like an Edgar Hayes composition and arrangement, that's a definite maybe, but of course the soloists on this December 1935 disc were Hayes, Red Allen, and clarinet wizard Buster Bailey. The title, E-flat Stride, by Mills Blue Rhythm Band, on the Swing Era.
Oh, the name of this song is Ride, Red, Ride, Ride, Red. We'll be right back.
You heard it on the Swing Era from the last Mills Blue Rhythm Band session in July 1937. We heard Jammin' for the Jackpot. Most critics credit it as the source of Count Basie's swing classic, Jumpin' at the Woodside. Composed and arranged by Eli Robinson, and along with Tab Smith, some new faces, the piano of Billy Kyle, the trombone of Wilbur DeParis, Harold Arnold's tenor, the trumpet of Sweets Edison, who probably carried the jammin' riff to Basie, and the screech trumpet at the end was Charlie Shavers. Jammin' for the Jackpot. And in the middle, a nod to the Casa Loma Orchestra with Gene Gifford's composition and arrangement of Smoke Rings from an early Mills Blue Rhythm session in September 1932, with Harry White's trombone stating the melody and some tasty Joe Garland tenor. And first off, a showpiece for Henry Red Allen's trumpet titled Ride, Red, Ride. But before we heard from Red on this July 1935 gem, the Bones get a fast-paced workout, followed by Joe Garland's baritone and then tenor, a muted trumpet, and an amazing clarinet solo by Buster Bailey, taken at a blistering tempo. The vocal was Lucky Millinder again, and then Red steps in to take it out. Ride, Red, Ride, a swing classic by a swing-era giant. And you heard it on the Swing Era. On the last set of the Swing Era, just up an October 1936 tune titled Balloonacy, composed by Tab Smith and arranged by Alex Hill, with the usual suspects soloing Tab's alto, Joe's baritone, Red's trumpet, and the clarinet of Crawford Wethington. And beginning the last set, Red Allen back for another encore with a gem composed and arranged by Red titled Red Rhythm, recorded May 1936 with the whole gang, Garland, J.C., Smith, and once again Red wrapping it up and leading the trumpets out. Well, we've still got more discs, but hey, no time to play them. So guess that's it for today on the Swing Era. That's it. So many records and so little time. Right now, we'll pack up the platters and take them back to the record vault till next Saturday and more Swing Era music. Till then, this is your host, Bud Pearson, hoping you've enjoyed Mills' Blue Rhythm Band. If you did, join us next week when it's time to jive, when we'll present more artists who created the styles and the sounds of the Swing Era. We'll see you then, and remember, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District. Online at kcea.org.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Sat listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and once again, welcome to another edition of Yesteryear, the best from the golden age of radio. On today's program, we'll enjoy an episode of Casey, Crime Photographer, from 1947. But first, on the lighter side, it's A Date with Judy, with special guest star Joseph Cotten. A Date with Judy premiered in June of 1941 and aired as a summer replacement series for The Bob Hope Show before winning a time slot of its own beginning in January of 1944. Ann Gillis originated the role of Judy Foster, but Louise Erickson took over in the summer of 1943 and quickly made it her own, starring in the teenage sitcom which continued until May of 1950. Her co-star Richard Corena later co-starred as Walter Denton in Our Miss Brooks on radio and the television series, as well as Luke on TV's The Real McCoys. On today's edition, Randolph has arranged for Judy to receive fake responses to her fan letters to Joseph Cotton. But his prank backfires when the actor arrives in town and goes on a date with Judy. From February of 1945, it's Joseph Cotton as special guest star on A Date with Judy, here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow notes, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Burton, Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
Tums, famous quick relief for acid indigestion, presents A Date with Judy. And the first of Judy's prominent guest stars, the distinguished motion picture actor, Mr. Joseph Cotton. And now to keep our date with Judy, that lovable teenage girl who is close to all our hearts. Your date with her each Tuesday at the same time is arranged by the makers of Tums, famous quick relief for acid indigestion. As we look in at the Foster house now, Judy, her kid brother Randolph, and her parents are in the living room.
What are you doing, Judy?
Writing a very important letter, Mother.
Judy, are you writing fan letters again?
Really, Mother? When a man is not only the greatest dramatic movie actor in the whole world, practically, and also the handsomest, most romantic thing there is, well, the least a girl can do is give him a little encouragement.
Well, do you have to take on his entire encouragement single-handed?
Yeah, can't you let some other girl encourage him once in a while?
Really? I don't think you people understand this at all. I'm certainly not in a category with girls who write mere mushy fan letters.
Oh, no.
Well, of course not. This is purely on a basis of a discussion of mutual careers.
Of mutual careers?
Oh, did he like you in your last picture?
Really? I see this matter can't be discussed with one's family. One has to forge on alone, fighting for one's ambitions in spite of the scoffing of one's family.
Yeah, I suppose that's what one has to do. I mean, one really does.
Well, I finished.
I'll mail it for you, Judy.
Thank you, Randolph. All I've got to say is someday when I'm a star in Hollywood, Tootsie Whiteman is going to be very, very sorry she used dirty politics to keep me from being vice president of my class. Well, if you'll excuse me, I shall go up to my room.
Farewell.
Is that feud between Judy and Tootsie Whiteman still going on?
Is it still going on? It's reached a new high. Will everybody excuse me while I make a phone call?
Well, of course.
You know, it'll be much more soothing around here when Judy leaves Hollywood behind and goes on to greater ambitions, like, like being a schoolteacher or something.
Hello.
Hello, Curly. This is Randolph.
Yeah, Randolph.
I've got another one.
You have?
Yeah, take care of it for me, will you?
Yeah, Randolph.
So long.
So long.
Just what was that conversation about?
Oh, it's a very clever and sinister plot.
Huh?
It's like this. Every time Judy writes a fan letter to Joseph Cotton...
Oh, so that's who Judy writes fan letters to.
Yeah. Well, it seems that Curly has a cousin who lives in Hollywood. And every time Judy writes a fan letter to Joseph Cotton, well, Curly's cousin who lives in Hollywood answers it.
Is that so?
Yeah. He makes out like he's Joseph Cotton. And Judy's fallen for the gag hook, line, and sinker.
I don't know if I like that.
Why, Father, what other brother would give his sister a thrill like that? And all for free.
Oh, Randolph, it's here, it's here.
What's here?
His letter. I can't wait to read what he says. Oh. Oh, this is so wonderful. Oh, where's the phone?
In its usual place.
Just wait till Tootsie Whiteman hears this. She'll die. That's what she'll do. She'll just die.
Well, don't ask me to go over and pick up her body.
Hello?
Hello, Tootsie. This is Judy.
Yes, Judy.
Well, Tootsie, I thought you'd be interested in the latest.
Oh, did you get another letter?
Listen to this. My dearest Miss Foster. Dearest, it says, Tootsie. Did you hear that?
Yes, I heard it.
My dearest Miss Foster. I think I should really be calling you Judy by now, because I feel that I know you so well. I have studied your lovely face again and again, and I thank you so much for sending me your photograph as I asked you to. It said a lovely face. Do you hear that, Tootsie?
Yes, I heard it.
Oh, this part's simply wonderful. I have decided that you are amazingly photogenic, and if you should ever come to Hollywood, please let me know so I can arrange a screen test for you. A screen test. Do you hear that, Tootsie?
Oh, I really wouldn't go to Hollywood if I were you. I hear you get terribly tired of the climate there. Just sunshine all the time.
Oh, I wouldn't mind that.
Yes, but what about Oogie Pringle? You and Oogie are such close friends. Terribly in love with you, and if you went to Hollywood, you'd have to give up Oogie naturally.
Oh, Oogie's just an immature boy.
17 and a half?
Yes, but he's so adolescent.
If you don't mind, I really have to hang up. My mother's waiting for me to go to town.
Oh, well, you don't want to hear the rest of the letter.
Oh, that's probably just a form letter he sends out to all his fans. I hear that's what they do, form letters. Well, so long, Judy.
So long.
Well, did she burn?
She's green with jealousy, saying it was just a form letter. Oh, I could feel whole waves of intense envy radiating over the telephone wires.
That's nice.
Oh, it's wonderful. Look at me, Randolph. Do you really think I'm photogenic?
Well...
Never mind answering. The main thing is a gorgeous, dramatic, handsome, superb actor like Joseph Cotten thinks I'm good enough to be in pictures.
You think this room's all right, Joe?
Fine, Don. As a matter of fact, for a town this size, it's darn good.
Yeah, for personal appearance tour in times like these, I must say we've had mighty little trouble. Well, I'm going to unpack.
Okay, I'm going to go downstairs and see if I can find a drugstore. I need a toothbrush. See you later.
I want a box of mascara, some pancake makeup, and an eyelash curler, please. And if you don't mind, I'd like to look at... Oh, jeepers! Excuse me a minute, please. I beg your pardon.
I beg yours.
Well, excuse me for coming up and talking to you like this, but I just had to.
Oh, it's all right. I suppose if people ever stop talking to me, I wouldn't like it a bit.
Oh. Well, what I wanted to say was, did anybody ever tell you look like Joseph Cotten?
Why, yes. People tell me that all the time.
You're just, the spitting image of him.
Is that good?
Oh, it's wonderful. I think he's marvelous, don't you?
Well, he has his faults. In that last picture of his, I didn't like it the way he looked in the mirror.
Oh, but that was marvelous. I thought he was terrific when he did that.
Sort of self-conscious, I thought.
I don't think you ought to run him down like that. He's really a marvelous actor, in spite of what you think of him.
Now, wait a minute. Don't get angry.
Well, it really hurts me to hear people going around knocking a simply marvelous star like Mr. Cotten.
Oh, far be it from me to knock him.
You're probably just a little jealous, actually, because he happens to be a famous movie star and you just look like him.
Well, that's possible.
He's really a wonderful person when you get to know him.
That's so. You know him?
Well, of course I do. Oh, not personally, of course, but he's been writing to me and, well, the depth and character of a man who's so famous and everything is simply, well, I think it's wonderful.
He's been writing to you?
Oh, yes. He asked me to come to Hollywood and take a screen test.
He has?
Of course. I guess he realizes from our letters that we could work together in cooperation and everything.
Oh, everything.
Mm-hmm. On account of a sort of mutual kinship of understanding we have.
Well, I wouldn't be too sure of that.
Well, goodbye. It was awfully nice talking to you.
Wait a minute.
Oh, I have to go. But you really do look an awful lot like
him.
Hey,
wait a minute.
Bye.
Do you have questions about how the world around you works? I'm Joel Block.
And I'm Deborah Bird. Tune into Earth and Sky for answers about everything from sea life to star systems.
And Einstein to the equinox. Catch Earth and Sky twice daily at 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. right here on Memories 89.1 KCEA.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now back to A Date with Judy.
Hey, Curly.
Yeah, Randall.
Did you see this in today's papers?
No.
Look at this, picture and everything. Joseph Cotton to conscript blood donors. Joseph Cotton, well-known Hollywood leading man, came to town today under the auspices of the Blood Donor Service. He will deliver a number of lectures today and this evening.
Yowie!
Double yowie.
Has Judy seen this yet?
Not that I know of.
Oh. Well, should we let her down easy or let nature take its thumb?
Gee, I don't know.
Well, it would be very interesting to see what happens.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, having said sort of a perpetual motion machine in action, it might be kind of intriguing to see where perpetual motion stops and the explosion of the atom begins.
Randolph?
Here comes the atom now.
Was there any mail for me today, Randolph?
Judy, would you kind of like to look over the headlines in the morning paper or anything?
No, I think I'll
There's a very interesting picture on the front page.
There is? Mm-hmm. Well, jeepers!
Is there anything wrong, Judy?
He's in town. Oh, then it was he. But why didn't he say so? Didn't he recognize me? After all, he has my picture. Could he have just been teasing me? Was he just leading me on, intending me to call up later? Oh, golly, this is amazing. I've got to figure this out.
Did you make anything your first statement, Randolph?
No, can't say that I did.
Very puzzling.
Stimulating, though.
Yes, very. Decisive reaction of some sort there, wouldn't you say?
Yes, quite.
Doorbell.
I'll get it. Well, hello, Oogie.
Hello.
Want to see Judy?
No. Well, as a matter of fact, I'd like to see your parents.
Well, that's nice for a change.
Yeah. Usually you spend evening after evening trying not to see your parents.
Well, this time I want to see them all right.
Well, I think that could be arranged. Father's home for lunch, and you can find them both in the breakfast room. Good. I shall accompany you. Excuse me, Curly.
Okay.
Yes, sir. When a man faces a crisis, I think the most definite thing he can do is face it.
Oh, hello, Oogie.
Hi, Oogie.
Hi. Mr. and Mrs. Foster, there's been something I've been wanting to say to you for a long time.
Well, this sounds serious.
Well, I felt it my duty...
No, just a minute, Oogie. Judy is entirely too young to be...
Well, that's just it. She's so young. Mr. Foster, she's so young, and... Well, that's the reason I thought it was best I came to you.
You're darn right it's best you came to me. Because we're going to put a stop to it right here and now. Just because you're going into the Army in another 6 months, you don't need to think that you can talk my daughter into getting married right now.
Oh, I don't want to marry Judy, Mr. Foster.
Maybe in a couple of... Huh?
I said I don't want to marry Judy.
Well, what are you getting us all excited for?
Well, I want to keep her from, well, maybe marrying some other man.
Some other man?
Yes. Mr. Foster, I'm not here to tell on Judy or anything, but, well, when a man reaches a crisis...
A man has got to face it.
Mr. Foster, what would you say if I told you a famous picture star has been, well, wooing Judy through the mail?
What? Oh! Is that all?
All? You should see what he says to her. Mr. Foster, I have here a packet of letters tied in blue ribbon, all of which this fiend wrote to Judy.
Where did you get those, Oogie?
Well, Judy loaned them to Tootsie Whiteman to read, and Tootsie showed them to me. Not that I'd want to go around reading other people's mail or anything, but... Well, when something like this happens, a man...
has got to face it.
Oh, come now, Oogie. Things aren't nearly as bad as you think.
Oh, they aren't. Well, Mr. Foster, this man is in town, and... Well, it's pretty terrible, that's what it is.
Well, Judy hasn't run off with him yet.
Really, Mr. Foster, I've got to see action. And if you treat my remarks with, well, levity, that's all. Well, I guess the thing I've got to do is just go to the source.
The, source?
Yes, sir, the source.
Joe, there's a boy outside wants to see him.
Boy?
Yeah, a kid about 17. He's been prattling something about some letters you wrote to a girl.
Some letters? You know, Don, this is the second time today I've been accused of writing letters to a girl. I wish you knew what this was all about.
You want to see him?
Yeah, send him in.
Okay. Right in here.
Yes, sir.
Hello.
Oh.
Anything I can do for you?
Yes, I... Yeah, there certainly is.
I mean, yeah, you certainly can.
Well, just sit down. Now, let's hear all about it.
All right. Well, it's like this. Mr. Cotton, I think... Well, I just think it's darn unfair to make a guy like me compete with a guy like you.
What was that?
I mean, what chance has a guy like me got competing with a famous screen star like you? I mean, well, it's unfair competition.
Well, I don't believe in unfair competition. I'm very much against it. Now, state your case.
Well, these letters you've been writing Judy, I don't think it's very sportsmanlike.
You have them here?
Yes. This packet.
Let me see them.
No, don't try to get them away from me. I'm keeping them. You don't need to think you're going to snatch the evidence so that when this thing gets to court...
The evidence? Well, I had no idea this innocent-looking packet of letters constituted evidence.
Well, they certainly do. And they remain in my possession.
I quite understand, Mr.
Mr. Pringle. Oogie Pringle.
I quite understand. I'll return them to you as soon as I look at them a minute now. Don will be a witness here, won't you, Don?
That I will.
All right, now let's see. Dated Hollywood, December 27th. Hmm? So far, so good. Now, we have as follows. My dearest Miss Foster.
You didn't need to have said dearest. You could have said just plain dear madam.
Yes. Yes, I could have. We'll mark that down as unfair. All right, let's proceed. I think I should really be calling you Judy by now because I feel I know you so well. Did I write that?
Yes, sir.
Corny, isn't it?
Oh, that's just the beginning. Now it really gets going.
I have studied your lovely face again and again, and I thank you so much for sending me your photograph as I asked you to. Ungrammatical, isn't it? No excuse for that.
And there's no excuse for asking her for a photograph either. My goodness, when you have all those beautiful girls to ask photographs from, like Lana Turner and Hedy Lamarr, and all I've got is Judy.
Oh, from all what I know about her, she sounds like plenty.
Well, look here. Boy, is she snazzy.
Let's proceed. Amazingly photogenic. And if you should ever come to Hollywood, please let me know so I can arrange a screen test for you.
You see, that's what's so unfair. You can lure with screen tests and everything, and well, all I've got to offer is just girl vocalist of Oogie Pringle's High School Hot Licks.
That seems enough to offer.
Well, not when you go around dangling screen tests at her.
I see what you mean. Well, Mr. Pringle, what would you like me to do about this?
Well, I'd like you to... Well, spend your time luring Lana Turner or somebody.
That sounds like an interesting idea.
Well, you see, Mr. Cotton, I know you're not really serious about Judy. To you, she's just a toy to be... Well, toyed with for a moment and then cast aside.
Like an old shoe.
Yes. Well, on the other hand, I'm very serious about Judy. And someday when I'm through school and I'm earning my own living... In about 10 years... Well, I'm going to marry Judy.
Well, in view of what you've just said, I feel rather ashamed of myself, Oogie.
You do?
Yes, I had no idea of anything like this, but now I do. I want to assure you that you can consider my courtship of Judy at an end.
Really, Mr. Cotton?
Yes. I give you my word, I'll never dangle a screen test in front of her as long as I live. Judy and I are, well, through, as you might say, in pictures, washed up, done, finny.
Oh, gee, Mr. Cotton, that's really, really very nice of you.
I can see you're the better man, Oogie, and I wish you luck.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Cotton. Yeah, I'm sort of ashamed of the way I barged in here so sore and everything. Didn't know you were going to turn out to be a gentleman like this. I mean, well, I want to tell you something, Mr. Cotton. It's been a pleasure to have a man like you for a rival. And I'd rather have you for a rival than anyone I know.
The nicest compliment anyone has ever paid me. Thank you, Oogie.
Thank you, Mr. Cotton. Well, so long.
So long.
And I just want you to know I heard you were here on account of the blood bank. And I just want you to know I'm going right down there and give quarts.
Now, that's what I call recruiting.
Don, I don't like this.
What do you mean?
Those letters. I held one out on Oogie. I'm going to track this down and find out who wrote it. Don, I think somebody's conducting a racket someplace.
You do?
I certainly do. Somebody someplace is getting hold of fan letters and writing to those girls, promising them screen tests. I don't know what his racket is, but, brother, I'm going to find out.
The Big Band era was a unique time in the musical history of the United States. Big Band Jump recreates the feeling of that time with the big bands and vocalists of yesterday and today. Hear Big Band Jump on Memories 89.1 KCEA. It'd be great to have you with us.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now back to A Date with Judy.
Curly.
In here, Randolph.
Hey, Curly, Flash, latest developments on the strange case of Joseph Cotton. Over at my house...
Where did you hear what's been going on over at my house?
What?
Well, the last time you gave me a report via the telephone...
Yeah?
Well, gee, my sister Tootsie was listening.
She was?
Yeah, I didn't know it while I was talking, but... Well, she's wise, Randolph.
You mean she knows Cotton didn't write those letters?
Yeah, and knowing my sister Tootsie like I do, the results are going to be mighty sad for your sister Judy.
Gee, what's she going to do, Curly?
She's going to sacrifice $5 of her own money to buy flowers and send them to Judy like they were from Joseph Cotton.
Wow.
Double wow.
Judy. Judy, come here.
Yes, Mother.
Judy, look at these flowers that just came.
Oh, aren't they gorgeous? Oh, they're the most exquisite things I ever saw. Who are they for?
They're for you. I wonder who they're from.
Oh, here's a card to Miss Judy. Oh, Mother. They're from Joseph Cotton. From Joseph Cotton? Oh, Mother!
What?
And look what it says. Dear Judy, accept this little token of my affection and promise you'll have a date with me tonight after my lecture at the auditorium. I'll pick you up at your house at 9:30. Signed, Joseph Cotton. Oh, Mother!
Oh, I don't believe it.
This is absolutely the most thrilling thing that ever happened to me, going out with a movie star who sends me flowers. Oh, Mother!
Now, wait just a minute, Judy, before you get so excited.
What'll I wear?
Oh, but Judy, you...
Should I go look at my evening gown or should I call Tootsie Whiteman first?
Will you not?
Should I wear flowers in my hair?
Well, dear, but
you think I'll look sophisticated if I wear mascara?
Now, Judy. Oh, there's the doorbell.
I'll answer it. I'll be glad to, Mother. Oh, hello, Tootsie.
Hello, Judy. By a strange coincidence, I was just going past your house and I thought I'd drop in for a minute.
Oh, I'm so glad you did, Tootsie. Just look what I've got.
What?
Flowers. And you'll never guess who they're from.
Well, I can't imagine. Who are they from?
Joseph Cotton.
Well, fancy that.
Hey, Curly.
Yeah, Randolph, what's the latest?
Well, Judy just took a milk bath.
Are you kidding?
No, it's the truth, and Tootsie's just sitting there building up the rat trap.
Randolph, I shudder for your sister, Judy.
So do I. Well, there's only one thing to do. When a man faces a crisis, he goes right to the source.
Hey, Joe, there's a boy out here to see you.
A boy? Same one?
No, different. A little one this time.
Well, there's some racket they've got me involved in. I'd like to get the bottom of this. Tell him to come in.
Okay. Come on in, son.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Cotton.
Yes, sir.
Hey, excuse me for butting in, but I felt I had to talk to you.
Oh,
Mr. Cotton, I wish to give you a full confession.
You wish to what?
There's something going on I feel you ought to know about.
I'll bet there is. Now, all right, tell me all about it.
Well, you see, it was this way. I have a friend named Curly. And that's the whole thing, Mr. Cotton.
Well, what do you know? Good Lord, and I told that Hollywood detective agency to go to work.
Well, call him up again tomorrow and tell him to lay off.
You know, I feel sorry for Judy.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be quite a letdown tonight when you don't show up.
Look, why don't I show up?
Gosh, Mr. Cotton, do you really mean it?
Mr. Foster, chivalry is not yet dead, sir. Don, where's my hat?
Oh, now, wait a minute. This is going to make Oogie awfully mad.
Oh, we'll be able to take care of Oogie.
Yeah, if he doesn't take care of you first.
Jeepers, it's 9:33 and a half. Oh, Tootsie, I was never so excited in my life.
What would you do if he didn't show up, Judy?
Oh, he'll be here. He said he would.
Take it easy.
Oh, I will. Tootsie, do you think when he gets here I should be kind of leaning languorously over the piano? Or do you think I ought to be draped rather languorously over a chair?
I wish I could drape you languorously over my knee.
He's nearly 4 minutes late already, isn't he, Judy, dear?
Oh, that's him. I mean, he... Do I look all right, everybody?
You look wonderful, Judy.
Yes, you look almost too wonderful. Can I come with you to the door to greet Mr. Cotton?
All right, Tootsie, it's a special favor. Oh, I can hardly wait.
Good evening, Judy.
Oh, Mr. Cotton. Oh, brother. Oh, Mr. Cotton, I just never had such a wonderful evening in my whole life.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, Judy. It was quite an experience for me, too.
Would you like to come in?
No, I'll say goodnight. You're out here on the porch.
Yes, it's much more romantic out here, isn't it?
Yes. And speaking of romance, Judy, there's one more thing I wish you'd let me say.
Oh, Mr. Cotton, I'm terribly young, I guess, even though I'm much older than I look. But if you'd be willing to wait until I finish high school...
Oh, no. That's not exactly what I mean, Judy. The kind of romance I want to talk to you about is... the kind of romance that exists between you and the boy... Rather, a man of your own age.
You mean...
Yes, Anna. That's the best kind of romance there is in the world. Take it from me. I know. You don't need Hollywood. You've got everything right here in this beautiful town. You don't need make-believe either. You've got the real thing if you only knew it. And someone like, well, what was the name of that boy you were telling me about?
Oogie?
Yeah, that's his name. Oogie. You know, Judy, he sounds like such a fine boy. You think it over, will you?
I will, Mr. Cotton.
Well, I'll say goodnight now. It was a real pleasure knowing you, Judy.
Oh, Mr. Cotton, it was beautiful knowing you.
Goodnight.
Good night.
Mr. Cotton, it's me, Oogie.
Oh, hello, Oogie.
I waited in the bushes like you told me to, and I heard what you told Judy.
You did?
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Cotton.
Oh, thank you, Oogie.
Gee, it isn't every guy in the world who can have a famous movie star to do his wooing for him.
But Oogie... isn't every movie star who can have a man like you for a rival?
Randolph.
Yeah, Curly?
I just want to tell you, we got a wire from my cousin in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He's in jail.
We'll be back with the Fosters next week. Joseph Cotton appeared through the courtesy of David O. Selznick and can be seen in the production I'll Be Seeing You. Mr. and Mrs. Foster were played by John Brown and Myra Marsh. Music was composed and conducted by Paul Sawtell. The program was produced and directed by Helen Mack. This is Doug Gourley inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday at this same time to keep your date with Judy.
From February of 1945, there's A Date with Judy with special guest star Joseph Cotton. In a moment, Casey, crime photographer, as Yesteryear continues.
Hello again, I'm David Miller, host of Swingin' Down the Lane. If you love the big band sound as much as I do, be sure to tune into our program each week. There's plenty of music by Ellington, Dorsey, Goodman, and Miller, just to name a few of the legends of the big band era. Tune in, won't you? Memories, 89.1 KCEA.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
And welcome back once again to Yesteryear. As our program continues, up next from July of 1947, it's Casey, crime photographer, starring Stats Cotsworth as Casey and Jan Miller as Ann Williams. Flash Gun Casey first made his movie debut in 1936 and then came to radio in 1943 with Matt Crowley in its title role. Stats Cotsworth soon took over the role and played it for the duration of the series, which continued until 1952. On this edition of Casey Crime Photographer, Casey and Ann track down a killer who stalks lovers in parked cars. From July of 1947, it's Death in Lover's Lane, as Yesteryear continues.
Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Tony Marvin. Every week at this time, the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation of Lancaster, Ohio, bring you another adventure of Casey, crime photographer, ace cameraman who covers the crime news of a great city. Our adventure for tonight, Death in Lover's Lane. A moonlight night, a lonely road, a parked car in which, close together, sit a man and woman. Ah, romance. And then, from the dense woods that line the road, the sharp snapping of a twig.
Bill.
Yeah, something's moving behind those trees.
A man.
I see.
He's coming this way.
What's your car doing here?
Is that any of your business, mister?
I think so. I'm a police detective.
Bill.
Quiet, Nora.
What do you want, officer?
Stay where you are.
He's pointing a gun at us.
What's the big idea, fella? You're a cop. Let's see your badge.
This gets my badge. Both of you, stick up your hands.
My hands are coming up, mister. With this!
You got him in the arm, Bill. Knock the gun out of his hand. He's running.
All right, you phony. Now stop or I'll kill you. I'm a real cop, and this is your last warning. Okay.
He made the woods. He's getting away.
I'm going after him. Now blow your whistle, Nora, and signal the boys to close in. This guy is the Lover's Lane killer.
The man got away from you in those woods, officer?
Yeah, that's right, Miss Williams. But Nora Ryan, the policewoman who was working this trap with me, had a prowl car here in a few minutes, and they radioed the precinct station to have the woods surrounded. The guy can't possibly get away.
I wish I were sure of that, Dino. Our guys have been searching those woods for an hour now and haven't found him. You should have shot him down when he started to run.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't do a better job.
Logan, why do you pick on Bill Dano?
Why, Casey?
Yeah. He and that policewoman have been laying traps for this Lover's Lane murderer ever since he began killing people 3 or 4 months ago. Well, a guy walked right into one tonight, and Dano and Nora Ryan sprung it on him hard. They did the best they could. Killer's bottled up in these woods, wounded and without a gun. You're sure to find him when daylight comes.
If this killer gets away after we hit him in our hands...
Do you think it's really the Lover's Lane murderer who came after Dano and Mrs. Ryan tonight?
Well, we can't be sure, Miss Williams. The only people who've seen the Lover's Lane murderer in action didn't live long enough to describe him. He found their bodies slumped in cars parked on lonely roads like this one. The dead bodies are 6 couples so far, with 32 slugs through their heads. But the guy who walked into one of our police traps tonight may have intended nothing more than a holdup.
Well, the gun that Dano shot out of his hand was a .32. Well,
there are a lot of .32 revolvers in illegal circulation, Miss Williams.
Ballistics hasn't had time to compare the gun he dropped with the murder slugs.
Of course not.
This guy does prove to be the Lover's Lane murderer. I will have had a bum hunch.
What do you mean?
I've had an idea the killer was a woman.
Hey, I've played around with the notion that a woman was behind these things myself.
Yeah?
A dame whose love life hadn't been so good and who resented other people finding romance under the moonlight in parked cars.
Well, what about the little card with I'm Death printed on it, the one the killer always leaves?
And those cards could have been left by either a man or a woman, Miss Williams. Our handwriting experts say they show no definite sex characteristics.
I know, Logan, but... Well, as I say, my hunch wasn't very strong.
Captain!
It's a gunshot.
Yeah.
They must have found him.
Well, it came from in there. Yeah, I'm going in.
Yeah, so am I. You stay here, Annie.
Oh, no, I will not.
Kid, look, for the shooting going on, no woman should
I don't call one-shot shooting. I'm going with you.
What's happened?
Captain Logan, come here.
I'm coming, Dano, but...
There's our man, Captain. Same guy who pulled the gun on Mrs. Ryan and me.
Good job, Dano. You got him this time.
Yes, and for keeps.
Huh? Oh, I didn't shoot him, Captain.
You didn't?
No, I heard a shot and came here in the woods in this direction and found the guy lying here.
Well, who did shoot him if you didn't? Our other cops are too far away. They're just getting here now.
I don't know.
Hey, Logan, there's a clean hole in this dead guy's head, and it wasn't made by a police .38.
Yeah, it looks more like a .32.
Captain, beside the body.
I see. Casey.
A printed card.
I'm Death.
The sign of the Lover's Lane murder.
Then he just killed this guy.
And this guy wasn't the Lover's Lane murderer.
Our story will continue in just a moment.
I'm Craig Roberts with a KCEA reminder. Literacy Plus is a volunteer program of the Hayward Public Library, which helps adults learn to read and write. Volunteers must be at least 18 years of age and willing to work 2 to 4 hours a week for at least 6 months. Tutor training will be provided. For more information to learn how you can become a volunteer tutor, contact Literacy Plus at 510-881-7910. That's 510-881-7910. And that's a community reminder from Memories 89.1 KCEA.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Logan, why be sore at your cops? When they heard that shot, they naturally did the same thing as you and Ann and I did. They investigated.
And while all of them were making for this point where the shot came from, the killer who left that I'm death card was making his getaway.
Oh, I don't think he's gotten away, Captain. He's still trapped in the woods. You'll get him.
Or her. I've still got that little hunch about a woman being the killer. Now that the guy who tried to stick up Dano and Mrs. Ryan has been put in the clear by getting shot through the head, well, maybe I'm right.
Is that I'm death card like all the others you found, Captain?
Yeah, Miss Williams, they're all the same.
And I think ballistics will say that the .32 slug found in this guy's head came from the same gun that killed those six couples.
I'm betting the same way, Casey. And I have the same cockeyed theory you have about the reason for this latest killing. A Lover's Lane murderer, whether man or woman, must be a psychopathic case. Such people nurse terrific egos as well as terrific grudges.
And he'd have gotten a kick out of shooting this man practically under the noses of you cops.
Yeah, that's it, Miss Williams. And the shooting served a practical purpose, too. It drew most of the searchers to one point and enlarged the guy's chances for a getaway.
Captain Logan.
Yes, Sergeant?
We've just found out the killer may have gotten out of these woods.
What?
There's an old dry culvert passes under the road on the northeast, and it's grown all over with bushes, but looks as if our killer knew about it and used it.
That's just swell.
I've learned something else, Captain. Maybe good news.
That I'd like to hear.
There's a half-crazy old guy lives in a cave in the hills just north of here. One of them hermits. Hates people and he knows every inch of these woods. They say he especially hates young people, Captain.
Yeah?
Hey, that sounds like a pretty good description of the Lover's Lane murderer, Captain.
You say he lives in a cave, Sergeant.
Yeah, the only name folks know the old guy by is Old Eve.
We'll pay Old Eve a visit right away.
Captain Logan! Captain Logan.
Who's calling?
It's me, Phil Dano.
Oh. Hey, who's that with you?
A gentleman I met out near the northeast road. He's given me some very interesting information I think you ought to know about.
I'm Clarence Butterworth, Captain. Professor Clarence Butterworth. I have a little summer place near here where I relax while the college is closed. I teach psychology at Sylvester Normal.
Glad to know you, Professor.
Captain, if I may... Like many other people of the neighborhood, I was naturally attracted by the large number of police cars and officers searching these woods tonight. And when I learned the reason for their activities, I introduced myself to this detective.
Tell the captain what you told me, Professor.
Yes, of course, Officer Dano. Captain, as one familiar with this section, I think I can suggest a suspect for your investigation.
I've just been hearing about the hermit Old Eve.
Yes. Old Eve, a pronounced misanthrope.
A what?
A hater of mankind. He would naturally fall under suspicion, but I don't think a creature of his limited mentality capable of successfully committing such a series of crimes. You see, Captain, I'm... if I may be permitted, I'm a student of crime.
Oh, you are?
Yes. As a professor of psychology, the subject of crime falls naturally... into my orbit.
Okay, who's your suspect?
A woman.
A woman?
Yes, Mr...
Casey's the name. Tell us about this woman.
Of course, Mr. Casey. She's a person of considerable wealth, and in my opinion, of strong psychopathic tendencies occasioned by an unhappy marriage. Her husband was, if this young lady will pardon me, something of a philanderer.
Oh, hubby played around with other dames.
yes. According to neighborhood gossip, she surprised him in a parked car one evening with a young female person and attacked the two of them with a butcher knife. Fortunately, her husband was able to disarm her before he could do any great damage. He afterwards had her committed to a sanitarium for mental treatment, an institution from which she was released only 6 months ago. following his death.
6 months ago, Logan.
Yeah, this thing checks in a lot of ways, Casey. Now, who is this woman, Professor, and where does she live?
Her name is Mrs. Norma Julian, and she occupies a small estate about a half a mile northeast of these woods.
That culvert's on the northeast, Captain.
Sergeant, we're not overlooking any bets, so you take a detail and get that hermit old Eve for questioning. Now, Professor, I'll have you take me and Officer Dano to Mrs. Norma Julian.
Also Miss Williams and me, Logan.
Mm-hmm, definitely us, Captain.
Okay. Come on, Professor, let's go.
Very well. This will be a most interesting indeed to an amateur criminologist like myself. Dear me, now I have an opportunity to see how real professionals work.
I'm Norma Julian. What do you policemen want?
I've just been talking to your servants, Mrs. Julian. They say that you've been away from home most of the evening, that you returned only a few minutes before we arrived.
I'm frequently away from home. What about it?
Well, I'd like to know where you've been.
It's none of your business. But I've been out walking.
Alone?
Alone. I prefer my own company.
Did you meet anyone during your walk?
I tried to avoid meeting anybody.
Where'd your walk take you tonight?
North of here, in the hills.
You weren't south of here in the woods?
No, I was not. Why?
There are burrs in your skirt, Mrs. Julian, and those woods are full of burrs.
There are plenty of burrs in the hills. What's the purpose of this questioning? And how dare you, policeman, bring that young woman into my house?
Oh, me?
Yes, you. You're the sort of woman that stole my husband, the kind that makes people say I'm crazy. You're the kind that...
Stop her, Dino.
She's
going
to hit me with that
vein. She's under control, Annie.
I've got the handcuffs on her.
Boy, she's crazy, all right.
I'm satisfied she's the one we've been looking for. Take her to headquarters, man, and get the psychiatrist to give her a going over while I search this house for a .32 revolver.
Yes, sir. Come on, Mrs. Julian. You're going to
tell her. Dear me, what a violent woman.
Professor, I'm very grateful to you for your tip.
Well, I'm happy to have been of service, Captain. We amateur criminologists can serve a purpose, can't we?
You served a double one tonight, Professor.
Thank you.
You made a little hunch of mine pay off.
Hunch, Mr. Casey?
Yes, I had a feeling that the Lover's Lane murderer was a woman.
Captain Logan! Captain Logan!
What are you doing here, Sergeant?
I've got the Lover's Lane murder, sir.
What?
We know who he is. We got him surrounded.
What are you talking about?
Yes, what do you
mean? Old Eve, the hermit. I took a couple of men, went to arrest him like the captain instructed. When we got in front of his cave, he started shooting.
Started shooting?
He's already winged one of our men. I had to call in reinforcements before I came here to get your further instructions, sir. There's a regular battle going on at that cave.
But why is the old fool putting up a fight? He's not the murderer.
But he is, sir. When he started shooting at us, he yelled the words on them cards and kept on yelling them. He says over and over, I'm death, I'm death.
Listen, Captain.
I hear, Dano. Hey, that one came close.
Annie, keep down behind these rocks. That old guy shoots straight.
No, I'm keeping down, Casey.
He isn't shooting so awful now, Captain. Maybe he's running short ammunition.
We got to get up there with a tear gas bomb and smoke him out.
Don't look like there's any shelter between here and that cave. We'll kill anybody who tried to climb that exposed hill.
We'll go around the hill. Get at him from the rear.
But the cave has only one entrance. The opening's in front, and he's watching us.
And how?
Heads down, everyone.
Captain, I'm sure the cave has two openings.
You are, Professor?
Reasonably so. During one of my rambles about the neighborhood last summer, I discovered an opening covered by trees that apparently led downward to the rear of Old Eve's cave.
Could you find it again?
I believe I can.
Sergeant, you and your men keep that maniac's attention. Start shooting and draw his return fire to exhaust his ammunition. Dano, you come with the professor and me.
Yes, sir. I'm going to be a part of that expedition, Logan.
No, Miss Williams. If Casey wants to take chances, that's his business, but I'll have no women.
You stay here, Annie, where it's safe.
Well,
safer.
Now lead the way, Professor, and keep under shelter. Let's go.
Very well.
See you later, Annie.
Oh, I hope so.
Nobody gets caught, you come, come,
how's that hunch of yours now, Casey, about a woman being the Lover's Lane murderer?
That hunch, Logan, just ain't around anymore.
Here's the opening, gentlemen. This is the cave, Logan. Say, Logan, how are you going to work this thing? Drop in a tear gas bomb?
No. Well, this hole's wide enough to squeeze through, so I'm going down.
That old guy'll put a rifle bullet right through you.
Well, he hasn't returned a shot to our guys for a long time now, Casey. He may be out of shells. Anyway, he's being kept so busy watching his front door.
It's a big chance, pal. You
know, Dano will follow and cover me.
So will I.
You haven't a gun.
So what?
So you're nuts.
Gentlemen, I think you're extremely foolhardy to venture in there.
It's got to be done, Professor. Here goes.
Dear me, this is exciting.
Climb down, Dano. Come on and be quiet. There's a bend in the cave and that nut can't see us from where he is.
I'm with you, sir.
Me too.
I also...
Professor.
I simply couldn't miss this, Captain. And I know you won't let me get hurt.
I'll keep quiet, then, and keep back. Come on, Dano.
All right. Hey, Captain.
Yeah?
Look, there's the old guy now, crouching behind that barricade.
His rifle's on the floor. He's out of ammunition.
Hey, Logan, he's got something else in his hands.
It's not a gun.
It's a bottle.
There he goes. Stick up your hands, Eve. We got you.
No. Keep back. Keep back, or I'll throw this bottle. It's full of nitroglycerine.
Oh, nitroglycerine?
Oh, it's all the thunderation. I'm dead. I'm dead.
Don't throw that. He's throwing it.
Oh, it didn't explode.
It was just a blunt.
I got the thing, Logan.
Stick it in your pocket, Casey, and give it to me later.
Yeah, I'll do
it. Oh, you... Clip this old maniac with my gun butt.
Sure did. He's out cold.
So is the professor.
The professor? What's the matter with him?
Yeah. Little guy fainted when he pitched that bottle. I almost did myself.
Yeah, me both, Dano.
Well, maybe you guys think I took it easy. Oh, boy, he might have had the real McCoy in that bottle. But anyway, we finally got the Lover's Lane murderer. I hope.
Here's another bottle of beer, Casey. You look as if you needed it.
Yeah, I do, Ethelbert.
This has been quite a night, Ethelbert.
I should imagine, Miss Williams, from what you've told me. Is that crazy old hermit the real Lover's Lane murderer?
We don't know. He's such a fruitcake, the cops don't get any sense out of him, even now that he's come to.
We didn't go back to headquarters with him because I had to write my story. And Casey had a lot of pictures to get ready for the engravers.
Yeah, I'll have to go to headquarters later and give Logan this bottle of nitroglycerin. Excitement, we both forgot about it.
Is that the bottle of stuff the old guy threatened you with?
Yeah. Looks like greasy dishwater or cold soup, doesn't it?
You're sure it ain't real nitroglycerin, huh?
If it was, pal, I wouldn't be here. When stuff like nitro gets thrown around, things blow up.
I've heard it don't stand for rough treatment.
That's right.
Logan will want that little bottle of dishwater for evidence, I suppose.
Oh, sure. Cops always want everything.
How about the woman, that Mrs. Julian, who was arrested first?
She's another nut. The police are holding her.
She may still turn out to be the killer, Annie.
Oh, Casey, you certainly hang on to a hunch.
I haven't a hunch about this thing anymore, or even an idea. You know, this has been a tough night.
Well, it's not over yet, Casey. We've another job to do.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
City Desk wants a lot of personal dope on little Professor Butterworth. We're playing him up as the big hero of this evening's frolic, so we're going out in the sticks again and see him.
He snapped out of his faint okay, huh?
Sure. He was still kind of white around the gills when we saw him last. Oh, come on, Annie. Let's get over with and call it a day.
Okay. So long, Ethelbert.
So long. Hey, Casey.
Huh?
Take your bottle of nitroglycerin.
Thanks for reminding me.
I wouldn't like it to explode sitting on my bar.
Sure you know how to find the professor's house, Casey?
Well, I have the address. Told me it's only a mile back of these woods.
This is a beautiful road in the moonlight.
Yeah, yeah.
No wonder so many couples have picked it as a lover's lane.
Don't see any neckers along here tonight.
Well, after what's happened, they've naturally been frightened away.
I wouldn't scare away that easy.
Wouldn't you?
No. I'd have had a real nice gal in the car with me.
Oh, is that so?
Yep. I'll prove it. Here's a good parking place.
Why, Mr. Casey...
Nice moon. Okay.
Uh-huh. Well, Now what?
Well, suppose you tell me what you think of Philadelphia's chances against Pittsburgh for cellar position.
Suppose I tell you what I think of you as a romantic character.
Oh, no, you'd flatter me, Annie.
Mister, I'd blister you.
Annie, what do you mean? I only...
Oh.
Hey, wait, shh. Quiet.
What?
Someone in those woods.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Good evening, young people.
The professor.
Yeah, he's got a gun in his hand.
Are you enjoying the moonlight? The beautiful, romantic moonlight?
We were.
Casey. Miss Williams.
Yes, you didn't recognize us as soon as we did you, Professor.
No, I didn't.
That's an interesting gun you're pointing at us. It's a .32, isn't it?
Yes. A .32.
Then,
You're quite right, Miss Williams. I'm dead. Don't move, Mr. Casey.
Well, one up for you, Professor. Tell me, why are you a killer? And the kind of killer you are?
Oh, Mr. Casey, I know you're only trying to game time, my boy, while you strive desperately to think of a way of escape. But I can spare a little time, and it'll be interesting to observe your desperation.
That's why you kill, to observe?
Exactly, Miss Williams. Oh. I'm a student of human emotions, and the only way to know them is to have them. A man cannot understand the mind of a murderer until he himself has killed. He cannot know the feeling of power until he has killed often. Until he has become as death itself.
You're mad.
Oh, no. Old Leaf is mad. Mrs. Julian's mad because they hate. I hate nothing. I love nothing. I merely observe. I weigh. I'm a true scientist. See?
Yes, sir. Something I've just remembered.
And tell me, what is that, my boy?
That guys who don't hate anything or love anything can be very much afraid of things happening to themselves.
I don't understand.
Maybe this will remind you. It's the bottle of nitroglycerin I took from Old Eve.
Don't put that down.
I'll put it down at your feet if you fire that gun.
No!
Drop that gun!
Yes, I will! I will!
He dropped the gun, Casey, and fainted.
He's out cold again. I've got his gun.
Now, why did he fall for your bluff? He knew that bottle didn't explode before.
How do I know what makes it madman tick, Annie? Phew, I didn't think he'd fall for that nitroglycerin gag. It was all I could think of, though.
Hey, Casey, here comes a police car.
Yeah, we'll flag it down. Get this guy under handcuffs.
Hey, stop him, Casey.
Casey, I thought we'd never find you.
Hi, Logan.
Hey, what are you doing here?
Looking for you too.
Your city desk told us you'd gone to the professor's house when we found nobody there.
Never mind about that, Sergeant. Say, here's the professor.
Never mind about that, Logan. Tell me...
Give me that bottle.
Bottle?
Yeah, the one you took from Old Eve.
Huh? Oh, sure, here it is. Catch.
No! You take it, Sergeant, and wrap it up carefully.
Yeah, I'll say I will. Wrap it up carefully?
Yeah. Old Eve swears it's the real stuff, Casey. He told us how he made it.
The good Lord only knows why it didn't blow us all apart when he threw it. Must have just landed easy.
That stuff?
Is a real...
Nitroglycerin?
Yeah, I recognize the soupy look of it now.
Now?
Oh, Casey, I think I'm going to faint.
Annie, move over. I'll join you.
We'll join the crowd at the Blue Note in just a moment.
The Big Band era was a unique time in the musical history of the United States. Big Band Jump recreates the feeling of that time with the big bands and vocalists of yesterday and today. Hear Big Band Jump on Memories 89.1 KCEA. It'd be great to have you with us.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
So they got the professor in a nice solid cell, huh, Casey?
Yeah, he's out of circulation, Ethelbert.
Gee. And you got him with that phony bottle of explosive that was nothing but greasy soup.
Yeah.
We haven't told you about that bottle, pal.
The professor, having a good knowledge of chemistry, among other things, had recognized it from the first as real nitroglycerin.
What?
Yeah. There was enough in that bottle to blow up a city block.
And you had it sitting in front of me on this bar tonight.
That's just what we did.
Ethelbert!
Wait a minute, pal. Hold on.
I'm trying to, Casey.
Casey, he's...
Ethelbert! Hey, don't faint. Ethelbert. Anne, he's... Walter. Walter!
Crime Photographer, starring Stotz Cotsworth as Casey, is brought to you each Thursday by the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation. Photographer is directed by John Dietz. The original music is by Archie Blyer, and the program features Miss Jan Minor as Anne and John Gibson as Ethelbert. This is Tony Marvin saying goodnight for the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From July 31st of 1947, there's Casey, Crime Photographer. And with that, we'll draw to a close another edition of Yesteryear, but invite you to be with us again next week at this time, and invite a friend to tune in, too, to enjoy the best from the golden age of radio, right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, bodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
KCEA Atherton, Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District. Online at kcea.org, the home of the big band. We'll be right back.
Good morning to you. When the band began to play, the stars were shining bright. Now the milkman's on his way, it's too late to say good night. So good morning, sunbeams will soon smile through. Good morning to you.
Playing the best music of all time, one hit at a time, on Big Band 89.1 KCEA, online at kcea.org.
Took my heart and found sounded freaky. Wonderful dreams, wonderful schemes from nowhere. Made every hour sweet as a flower to me. If you should go back to your nowhere, leaving me with a memory, I'll always wait for your return out of nowhere, hoping you'll bring your love to me.
Summer wind came rolling in across the sea. It lingered there to touch your hair and walk with me. All summer long we sang a song and strolled the golden sands. Two sweethearts and all that summer wind. Painted kites, those days and nights, they went flying by. The world was new beneath a blue umbrella sky. And softer than a Piper Man, one day it called on you. And I lost you to that summer wind. The autumn wind, the winter wind has come and gone. And still those days, those lonely days go on and on. And guess who sighs his lullabies through nights that never seem to end. My fickle friend, oh, that summer wind. Take her away from me.
were three little sisters.
And Donna.
Three little sisters.
And Mimi.
Each one only in her teens.
I'm little Sally.
One loved the soldier.
And Chun.
One loved the sailor.
Ship ahoy.
One loved the lad from the marine.
Oh, boy.
Oh, the three little sisters. They were the fairest from Iceland to the Philippines.
So said the soldier.
So said the sailor.
And so said the lad from the marine.
And when the boys marched away,
said they'd be true until the boys come back someday.
Now the three little sisters, stay home and read their magazine. You can tell it to the soldiers, tell it to the sailors, and tell it to the Marines.
The soldier after duty dated up his cutie.
The sailor dated Mimi. The moon was bright and dreamy.
And we went rowing after dawn.
The marine dated Sally, fairest in our alley.
And we went riding for a while.
And then the soldier, marine, and the sailor all kissed their sweethearts in the dark.
The soldier boy held his ground.
The sailor took his tip. He said, I won't give up the ship.
The marine as commanded said, we have landed. We've all three won our little queen.
For Donna loved her soldier. Mimi loved her sailor.
And Sally loved her marine.
Said the lad from the marine.
Now in the evening are the sisters grieving. When boys call for dates, do they go?
Well, how about the soldier?
No.
How about the sailor?
Nope.
The marine?
Well, wouldn't you like to know?
tired of the same old stuff on TV?
Mad Scientist plots to turn the entire Earth into a volcano.
Will not be presented tonight so that we may bring you the following special program.
Starting Friday at 8, 7 Central and Mountain.
In living color.
Step into the theater of the mind.
Lux presents Hollywood.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
We offer you Escape.
Experience the best from the golden age of radio on Yesteryear with Craig Roberts. Sunday mornings at 10 and Monday evenings at 9. Here on 89.1 FM, KCEA.